Speaking on the program at this time is Brother James W. Boyd.
We can, of course, learn from those who have lived godly lives to imitate that godliness. But we can also learn things from those who are not known in the Bible for being so godly. I want to talk to you about a man of the Old Testament named Nebuchadnezzar. I recall in trying to teach some youngsters about this particular individual in Bible class, and that was a mouthful. Nebuchadnezzar. But Nebuchadnezzar was a very astonishing person. I doubt that there's hardly anybody else, either in secular as well as sacred history, that we can really compare him to be just like he was. Of course, everybody is distinctive and different, but I think it is really true that we can say he was unique and almost peculiar, because he was a man of such boldness. He was a man that possessed great power, but a man that was very eccentric. And for a period in his life, it seems that he was made insane. There are lessons to be learned from events that are recorded for us in the Bible about Nebuchadnezzar, and his name is mentioned in a number of places. And God has seen fit to tell us something about him, doubtless because of his relationship with the people of Judah. And he was the king of Babylon when Babylon conquered southern Judah and took them off into captivity. Now, secular history tells us that Nebuchadnezzar was the son of the founder of this great Babylonian empire. There had been other empires in that general area of Mesopotamia before, but this Babylonian empire came into being about 700 or so years before Christ. And it became a worldwide empire under the almost genius kind of leadership, at least military leadership, of this man Nebuchadnezzar. And as I mentioned, he was the head of the Babylonian forces at the time that God's wrath against southern Judah allowed them to be carried away into captivity. This man built a kingdom that was so wealthy and so powerful and so prominent, particularly in the world of his time, that the estimates of his power and his wealth have not even been properly calculated to this day. I'm sure that many people have heard about the Babylonian gardens, and he was a tremendous builder of buildings, and he built a glorious and marvelous city, as well as being a power, the power of his day. The capture by Nebuchadnezzar of southern Judah and of Jerusalem particularly probably has seen no equal in the lack of mercy that a conqueror showed toward those whom he conquered. Under his guidance, Jerusalem was destroyed. The people either were killed or burned or carried away into captivity. There was not the slightest inkling of consideration or mercy for the people whom he conquered. The riches of the sacred places in the temple of Jerusalem were taken away. All of the things that the Jews considered to be sacred and holy were plundered. All of the valuable men and people of any sort of quality and potential whatever were deported from Judah. And he only allowed a certain rabble element to remain there. And in order to heap as much humiliation and distress upon the Jewish people as he could, he took the very implements, those implements that God had instructed the priest to use in worshiping the true and living God, he would take those implements and give them to his pagan priest, and those pagan priests would use them in worship to their various idols. And there was nothing holy and sacred to other people that he would consider holy and sacred at all. During his reign, he was subjected to certain visions. I suppose that the vision and dream that Nebuchadnezzar had that is most discussed not exclusively, but most discussed about Nebuchadnezzar would be the one where he saw this awesome image that represented the future kingdoms that were to come and the coming of the kingdom of Christ in the days of the fourth empire that image represented. We read about that in Daniel, the second chapter. We read about how Daniel told about the dream and he told the meaning of the dream. And I want us to consider another vision tonight that Nebuchadnezzar had. It's one that he himself spoke of. He narrated it himself in Daniel, the fourth chapter. Now, I urged you today, tried to remind you to bring your Old Testament with you tonight and to follow along with some of the reading that I want to do here in Daniel 4. So if you happen to have your Old Testament, I'll give you just a moment to open it to Daniel, the fourth chapter. And this was a vision that proved to be very distressing to Nebuchadnezzar, and of course was interpreted by Daniel. Now, let's begin reading together with about verse 4, and where he says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house and flourishing in my palace, and I saw a dream which made me afraid. Well, we go on down further to verse 10, and he begins to tell what it was that he saw. Thus were the visions of mine head in my bed. Here it is. I saw and beheld a tree in the midst of the earth, and the height thereof was great. The tree grew and was strong, and the height thereof reached unto heaven, and the sight thereof to the end of all the earth. The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much. And in it was meat for all. The beast of the field had shadow under it. The fowls of the heavens dwelt in the boughs thereof, and all flesh was fed of it. And I saw in the visions of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher and a holy one came down from heaven. He cried aloud and said thus, Hew down the tree, and cut off his branches, and shake off his leaves, and scatter his fruit, and let the beast get away from under it, and the fowls from his branches. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots in the earth, even with a band of iron and brass, in the tender grass of the field. And let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let his portion be with the beast in the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from man's, and let a beast's heart be given unto him, and let seven times pass over him. The seven times would refer to 7 years pass over him. So here we see this great tree, a majestic tree, a tree that's far beyond reality, but one that was just observable from both heaven and earth, supplying everything. The greatness of the tree is emphasized here, but it was cut down, and everything about it was dissipated, but the stump of it was allowed to remain. Verse 17 tells us, This matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the word of the holy ones. And here's the purpose of this vision and the purpose of this dream. To the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will and setteth up over it the basest of men. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. And then he turns to Daniel, whom he calls here by the Babylonian name Belteshazzar, and asks him if he's able to interpret this dream for him. And of course, Daniel is able to interpret it. And in verse 24, Daniel begins to tell him the meaning of it. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king. So this vision was directed toward Nebuchadnezzar himself. This great tree we're going to see is representative of Nebuchadnezzar himself because of his great power and the power of his kingdom. And Daniel said, this is something that Almighty God, the Most High, that's God in heaven, is revealing, that they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. And they shall make thee to eat of the field, or to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times, that's 7 years, shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will. And whereas they commanded to leave the stump of the tree roots, thy kingdom shall be sure unto thee, after that thou shalt have known that the heavens do rule. I suggest to you, first of all, that it took a great deal of courage for Daniel to stand before this mighty monarch, the greatest ruler of all time till that time, in having unlimited power to do as whatever he wished, who looked upon himself as a god, to stand before him, to interpret a dream unto him, a dream from God and the meaning of it coming to Daniel from God, and it was a word of doom and despair and destruction, at least temporarily, to this great invincible king. He is telling him, God is going to cut you down. Now, that would not have been an easy message for Nebuchadnezzar to receive, and it wasn't. He didn't readily accept the meaning of it. It's a wonder he didn't turn on Daniel. Because this man had the idea that he was who he was because of the might of his own power and because of his own genius. And God was going to teach Nebuchadnezzar something that Nebuchadnezzar needed to learn, indeed something that we need to learn as well. And he warned him that even though you are now as a great tree, everyone looks to you. You have the power to supply everything to everybody. There's coming a time you are going to be driven out. You will be, like the tree, hewn down, and you'll be treated as a beast. And you'll have to live as a beast. And for 7 years, you will be out here for your sustenance eating grass like a beast. And this humiliation will be yours to suffer. Now, to say that to one who was so puffed up and puffed up with his own pride and pompous attitude was really telling a message that would not be very popular. He told him you're going to be brought down, but the fact that the stump of the tree was allowed to remain, Daniel went on to say and to show that he would eventually be restored. Now, just here, let's take just a moment and look a little closer at the character Nebuchadnezzar himself. He was a very public, open, avowed, notorious idolater. In fact, he considered himself a god. He made gods. He patronized the gods that he made. He allowed decrees to be made to worship various gods. He would not allow anybody to disobey the decree to worship the gods of his making and also unto him. It was his passion for idols and for gods that caused him to issue the decree, and nobody was supposed to pray unto anybody but himself. Daniel went ahead and prayed to God. And at the sound of a trumpet on another occasion, everybody was supposed to bow down before a certain image of his construction. Well, you remember the three Jewish children, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that refused to do so. And as the Bible student will remember, they were cast in the fiery furnace, a furnace that Nebuchadnezzar caused to be heated 7 times above its normal heat. So in looking at Nebuchadnezzar, we see a man that pays divine honors to a senseless, powerless, material image, which was no life in it whatever. And it would seem to me, and I'll just pass along this personal evaluation, that a person who would bow himself down and worship before such a thing does not look rationally at reality. He ought to know that here's something I made. How can that which I made help me? I made it. I'm greater than it is. Yet that's the kind of man Nebuchadnezzar was, even at the very height of all of his power. He was a man, as we have passingly noted, capable of and demonstrated relentless cruelty. Secular historians tell us that his kingdom was veritably held together because of threat and intimidation, persecution and cruelty to his subjects. Now we've noted how that he threw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into a fiery furnace. That's a very cruel and inhumane way to execute anybody. He put Daniel in the lion's den. And another mark of cruelty was that when he captured Judah, the king of Judah, which was the last king, was Zedekiah. He took Zedekiah, and right before the eyes of Zedekiah, he took Zedekiah's own sons and had them slain. And that was the last thing Zedekiah saw, not because he then in turn killed Zedekiah, but he put out Zedekiah's eyes. Now this is the kind of man that we're talking about here. History recalls Nebuchadnezzar as being a man of war, a man of blood, a man of ruthless cruelty. And secular history also shows, as well as the victories that Nebuchadnezzar won that are recorded in the Bible, he was a man that was noted for his insatiable ambition, his desire to conquer and control everything within his grasp. And this he pretty well was capable of doing. As we read about Nebuchadnezzar, he is somewhat like another great worldwide ruler which came on the scene a number of years later, some 3 to 350 years later, Alexander the Great, who at the age of 33, it is reported that he wept because there weren't any more worlds to conquer. And this was the kind of man, he always was striving to attain something greater, and he would do so, and whereas ambition in itself is not bad, it only fed his own ego and his own glory of himself. Nebuchadnezzar was a man that is noted for his exceptional haughtiness, his arrogance, his pride. And when he would walk out among the glories of the city that he had erected, he talked, well, look at verse 30, he talked about what I have built, and of my power, and of my majesty. He was a living example of pride within the human heart. He constantly proclaimed his own personal brilliance. He prided himself so much in what he had done, he felt that he was what he was without the help of anybody or anything. Now, sometimes people get this kind of attitude, you know. Sometimes people begin to think more highly of themselves than they ought to think. And they develop a concept of themselves that they themselves are responsible for all of their successes. They owe nothing to anybody for anything. And he was a man that was certainly possessed and spiritually diseased with pride. But God humbled him. God brought him low. He was allowed to be in such a state that it is thought that, and it is compared with being insane. And he lost control of his kingdom, this great kingdom that he thought was his because of his own power. And he was allowed to become as a brute and as a beast. And he lived outdoors. He ate grass. He was despised by all. He lost all of his friends, all of his prestige, all of his power. In his world of grandeur and riches and wealth and fame, why, it all collapsed. And his enemies drove him from his palace. A few people of whom we read in the Bible that were any more degraded. His existence became wretched. And the thing about Nebuchadnezzar, and we don't say this without some sympathy to anybody that falls, has hard times befall him, all that befell him, all of his hardships, he deserved every bit of it. Because of the kind of man that he was. Because of the attitude that he had. Now, it is true that his humiliation was temporary. It lasted, however, for 7 years. In God's wisdom, that was the time. It lasted long enough until it accomplished God's purpose. And once again, we bring to our attention what was the purpose of all of this. Verse 17, Daniel 4. To the intent that the living, now that's not just Nebuchadnezzar, but Nebuchadnezzar and all living, and that would not only include people then, but I suggest even now, that the living may know that the Most High, that's Almighty God, ruleth in the kingdom of men. We won't talk about that in just a moment. God allowed these things to happen to him to bring him to his knees, that he might recognize the true and living God of heaven to whom he owed everything, that he was allowed to rule. God allowed him to rule. And therefore, having accomplished its purpose, this humiliation was lifted from him. He was returned to his throne, and it is significant that from this time forward, whatever we read about Nebuchadnezzar, he doesn't claim self-glory, but he attributes what was and the glory that he had to Almighty God. Look at verse 34 beginning. And I want to read the last four verses of the chapter. And at the end of the days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up mine eyes unto heaven, and mine understanding returned unto me. You see, he had gone 7 years now. His understanding had been fogged. And I blessed the Most High, and I praised and honored him that liveth forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. And all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. And he doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. And none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? Here's this once mighty, powerful, proud, self-pumped up leader saying, look, God is the greatest. And nobody has a right to even question what he does. At the same time, my reason returned unto me, and for the glory of my kingdom, mine honor and brightness returned unto me, and my counselors and my lords sought unto me, and I was established in my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added unto me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of heaven, all whose works are truth, and his ways judgment, and those that walk in pride he is able to abase. Now, the Apostle Peter pointed out that the Lord exalts those who humble themselves. Here's a man that wasn't about to humble himself, so God humbled him. And once he went through this ordeal, indications are that this man was genuinely penitent of his former attitudes. And never again do we read of him being the kind of proud, haughty, arrogant, self-sufficient, needing nothing kind of person. But he looked unto the true and living God. Now just briefly, very hurriedly, I want to point out four applications and lessons that I think we can learn from this. One, and that which was the primary one, and that's God's overruling power in all things. May I suggest to you that the affairs of the world sometimes are very perplexing and confusing, and we don't understand why things happen and things go on, and we don't understand how it is. But let's understand that God teaches us in His Word, like we sing in that song, this is our Father's world. He didn't just wind us up and turn us loose. And like another song that we sing, God's hand is in it all. And it's like when Jesus was standing before Pilate, when Pilate was somewhat boastful that he had the power either to let him live or to let him die, Christ said, you wouldn't have any power at all except it was given to you. Would to God that men who rule over nations today, yea, our own and all others, recognize that they are there because God allows them to be there, and they have a responsibility not just to the electorate. They have a responsibility to God. If we had rulers like that throughout the world situation could be changed for the better everywhere. Men don't always learn that. But Nebuchadnezzar was taught that, and he learned it. And those who rule in the affairs of the world Though God's ways are not like our ways, and we don't always understand the hows and the whys and the wherefores of all things, never think for a moment that people can overrule God and His decisions. God rules our world. Secondly, I suggest that we see here the wickedness of pride and self-glory. Oh, how many people in the Bible have been humbled because of their pride. You think about Haman in the book of Esther, that was hanged on the very gallows that he had prepared for Esther's cousin Mordecai. We read about Herod in the New Testament, who allowed himself to be praised as a god, but later on he was a victim of his pride and he died. Our very first parents fell beneath the vain glory of life and were cast out of the garden. Pride goeth before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall, Proverbs 16 and verse 18. Of all of the foolish things that men sometimes heap unto themselves, it is their pride. Pride will keep people from submitting themselves to truth. Pride will keep people continuing on in the ways of error just because of their pride, unwilling to be humbled by what is right before God. A third lesson that we learn, cannot we see the importance of having divine favor above every other thing that we could possess? What doth it profit a man, Jesus said, if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Dear friend, it is a waste of life to seek after the paltry, passing things of this world to the neglect of our spiritual welfare and favor with God. We may have fame, we may have fortune, we may have friends, we may have family, we may have everything this world could offer and be a miserable disgrace before God, and we are an eternal failure. In the book of Luke, chapter 12, we read about that man that called the rich fool, who heaped to himself such an abundance of this world's goods, only to quickly learn that this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall all these things that thou hast be? To whom will they belong? He's going to leave them all. He had sought after that which was fleeting and passing and could not sustain him. Are we going to be deceived by riches and by wealth and materialism, as was Nebuchadnezzar for a goodly portion of his life? Cannot we see that through all of this experience to Nebuchadnezzar, God is teaching the living, that's us, what really matters, what really counts? So many people really don't have a grasp on life. They don't have a hold on life. They don't have a goal in life. They're seeking after the things that don't matter. This lesson teaches us to seek divine favor. There's one other thing that I want us to learn from this, and that's the glory of God. Not only that He rules, but the glory in that God was merciful and forgiving to Nebuchadnezzar. This man was guilty of the worst sort of crimes, but God looked on Nebuchadnezzar as no doubt He looks upon all of us. And it's somewhat comforting, isn't it, that when God looks upon us, oh yes, He sees us as we are. But He sees us another way too, brethren and friends. He sees us in the light of what we're capable of being. You know, if God just looked upon us as we are, He might never really smile upon us. But He looks upon us as He looked upon mankind when He sent His Son to this world. He saw what man is, but He saw his potential. He saw what he was capable of being. And that's the way, thankfully, God looks upon me. And that's the way He looks upon you and your friends and your neighbor and your family and all about. And God, when He looks upon us, no doubt, but certainly before we became Christians, was not pleased. But you see, He sent Christ because He knew what you could be. He knew you could be His child. He knew you could live righteously. He knew you could do good in spite of all of the havoc of your life previously. I think we see this, do we not, in this vision, in this dream that Nebuchadnezzar had. And God saw him, he was so reprehensible, and mercifully God punished him and taught him what he needed to learn. And then when he turned from his wickedness, God blessed him, restored him, obviously forgave him. That's what God will do for any of us tonight. That's the reason he sent his Son, to show his mercy and his grace and his love toward us. I think we can learn some great lessons. There are other lessons, but time forbids us tonight to go into them that we can learn from the study of Nebuchadnezzar, but this will suffice. We need to be appreciative of what God has revealed about this and any other person in the Bible, but particularly the lessons that we can draw from these events. Not obey him. Faith, repentance, confession, and baptism into Christ to begin your journey toward heaven.